Today's Cloudcast is brought to you by Datadog, a full-stack monitoring platform that integrates with over 400 technologies like Gremlin, PagerDuty, AWS Lambda, Spinnaker, and many more. With rich visualizations and algorithmic alerts, Datadog can help you monitor the effects of chaos experiments, identify weaknesses, and improve the reliability of your systems. Visit datadog.com/cloudcast to start a free 14-day trial and receive one of Datadog's famously cozy t-shirts. That's datadog.com/cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody is doing well. Hope everybody is staying safe. The virus still continues to dominate the news, but hope everybody is practicing good social distancing, washing your hands, staying safe, and keeping your friends and family safe and in touch, and just trying to find some sort of normalcy in all the craziness that's going on. We're going to get right to Cloud News of the Week. There are a number of things that were announced this week, a couple of acquisitions, a couple of funding rounds, and some interesting news. First and foremost, about a week or so ago, Microsoft made a big announcement as the virus was changing the way our working patterns are. And they claimed 775% growth in the Azure cloud. They did have to come back and make a retraction or sort of a fix of that claim. Basically came back and said, well, it's not the entire Azure cloud. It is just one communication collaboration service, and it really is just in one region that geographically had been significantly impacted around the world. So Microsoft making kind of a sorry about that kind of claim about some growth. We are still seeing growth around the cloud of a lot of services, a lot of collaboration services, a lot of backup services, but not 775% across the board. Second thing was Palo Alto Networks, or Palo Alto, who has been on a kind of an acquisition spree the last 12, 18 months or so, had previously been getting more acquisitions around security and some serverless stuff, made an acquisition in the SD-WAN space, acquired a company called CloudGenix for $420 million. So beginning to expand out where they do networking. And also, we're seeing, obviously, with lots of people working from home, a big expansion of need for bandwidth between remote locations and the cloud. So big acquisition for Palo Alto. Next, Cisco acquired an IoT backup or wireless backhaul provider called Fluid Mesh. So obviously, as we're seeing IoT and 5G and a lot of edge computing start to take off, Cisco wants to be considered a large player in that space. So making an acquisition in that space of Fluid Mesh. And then finally, MariaDB, who runs the MariaDB database, is announced SkyDB, which is MariaDB as a service in the public cloud. This is not really an unusual announcement. We have seen a number of database companies, especially those who are backed by open source projects or sort of the leading company in an open source project. We've seen this from a number of different vendors, but good to see MariaDB expanding out into a cloud-hosted offering. A lot of these offerings have been doing very, very well. And not only that, but they also begin to bring a lot of operational expertise to that technology. It helps improve those technologies and helps kind of provide some confidence for customers that the technology they're going to be using has been used and tested at scale in the cloud. So congratulations to MariaDB. So with that, we're going to kind of wrap up Cloud News of the Week, and we're excited about today's interview. We're going to talk a little more about cloud native development and some of the patterns around how we are successful with cloud native development, both from a technology perspective, a risk management perspective, an organizational perspective, and obviously an innovation perspective. So looking forward to that interview right after the break. Today's show is sponsored by DivvyCloud. DivvyCloud is a cloud security posture management platform that protects cloud and container environments from policy violations, threats, IAM challenges, and misconfigurations. The types of misconfigurations that cause data breaches and threaten the livelihood of enterprises across the globe. In the span of just 2 years, data breaches attributed to cloud misconfigurations have cost enterprises a jaw-dropping $5 trillion. Why? Because cloud security is often sacrificed in favor of innovation, speed, and agility. DivvyCloud is proving that security and innovation are not mutually exclusive. Join innovative enterprises like Spotify, Twilio, and Discovery, who have found the freedom to innovate securely without the loss of control. DivvyCloud provides continuous security and compliance across all cloud providers and containers, including AWS, GCP, Azure, Alibaba, and Kubernetes, providing a comprehensive view of what's in your cloud, along with the tools and automation you need to manage it today, tomorrow, and well into the future as your business needs grow and change. To learn more, visit divvycloud.com/cloudcast. That's DivvyCloud divicloud.com/cloudcast to sign up for a free trial. Divi Cloud, find your freedom to innovate. Today's show is brought to you by MongoDB. When you need to focus on building applications, do you want to get bogged down by your database? Definitely not. MongoDB is an intuitive, flexible document database that lets you get to building. MongoDB's document model is a natural way to represent data so you can focus on what matters. And MongoDB Atlas is the best way to use MongoDB. It's a global cloud database service that gives you all the developer productivity of MongoDB, plus the added simplicity of a fully managed database service. You can get started for free with MongoDB Atlas at mongodb.com/atlas. That's mongodb.com/atlas. And we're back. You know, and folks, for anybody that's been listening for a while, you know that we've always tried to find sort of a balance between, talking about things that are infrastructure sometimes and things that are application development. And, you know, while we talk about a lot of really sort of interesting, you know, maybe technology trends around application development, we don't always get a great chance to really kind of understand a little bit of sort of the science behind, you know, how great applications and bad applications are built. And, you know, we thought today would be a good day to kind of dig into that. So very, very excited to have Ian Crosby, who is Managing Director at Container Solutions. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Brian.
So before we get started, give us a little bit of your background. You've been around, not only being a developer, but helping people build applications for a while, but give folks a little bit of your background.
Sure. So I've been in the software industry for about 15 years. I started off doing development for military defense systems. I did that for a long time. And then from there, I kind of switched into the online world. I did some startup scene in San Francisco for a while. And then I started to get interested in kind of the tooling and ops side of things. Public cloud was starting to get pretty interesting. New technologies coming out like Docker, and started playing with this stuff in my own time. And then about 4.5 years ago, I met the folks at Container Solutions over in Amsterdam. And so I joined them and have spent, the past 4+ years being able to play with these kind of cloud native technologies in my day to day. And it's basically working with organizations to help them on their cloud native transformation journey. So how do you bring in these new technologies, these new ways of working into your organization, and adopt them and leverage them the best that you can? So what's really interesting in doing consulting in this space is you get to experience a lot of different use cases and a lot of different challenges and contexts, and then kind of see the commonalities that come up. So the patterns that emerge from there.
Yeah. And I imagine, not only when you're consulting, not only are you sort of bringing your ideas, but you're having to sort through a lot of things from people who either are, they're trying to get educated, or, they're coming to you sometimes from a bad place and they're trying to get out of it. So I imagine you've seen sort of all sides of what, the kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly of cloud native.
Yeah, 100%. And it's this, you're constantly kind of learning and bringing in new things, and then you get to bring those learnings to your next project. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, very, very cool. So one of the things that I find, as I talk to developers or people that are, working around this space, is they always talk about this concept of patterns, right? It's sometimes it's less about technology and they talk about patterns. So this is an area that you talk about quite a bit. You focus on, help us understand, what do we mean when we talk about, application patterns? How do they, what do they look like maybe in the old world? You talked about, building military systems. And then, what are some of these new cloud native types of concepts and patterns?
Sure. So yeah, it's a good question. So if we kind of do kind of a quick history, patterns in this context, we usually derive back to the architecture world. And, we're talking actual buildings here, not software architecture. There's an architect by the name of Christopher Alexander, who, along with some of his colleagues, came out with this book called A Pattern Language. And it's essentially a collection of patterns used in designing towns and buildings. So in there, you can find things like how to design grave sites, or how a beer hall should look, where a playground should be placed inside of a town. And the idea was that these are designs which can be then reused by others, either professional or not, when they need to, modify or design a new town. And from there, this kind of spread out to other industries. Of course, this came to the software industry. The most famous version is the Gang of Four's Design Patterns book. And, I think this book now is 25 or 26 years old, But what's interesting is that it's still relevant today. So, you know, we're still talking about decorator patterns or builders or factories. And, you know, in a world where a JavaScript framework has a shelf life of 6 months, it's pretty amazing to see this 25-year-old book with these patterns defined that are still being used and still relevant. So I think that speaks a lot to the power of patterns in general.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense because I think when you start to, you not necessarily make them historical, but you codify it, you sort of talk about the reasons why certain trade-offs and decisions were made, you know, to a certain extent, you're building in a little bit of experience of like, you know, people may have had this crazy idea, but, you know, this could be the downside of it. And when you're talking about software, you know, people can talk about scale and all sorts of other crazy things. But like at the end of the day, you're kind of in the back of your mind always going, you know, will it work? Will it work when it needs to get bigger? And then, you know, maybe where will it fail? And how do I build around it? So yeah, the concept of this being a historical, kind of having historical precedence is very, very interesting. You've been talking a lot about cloud native patterns. You know, for folks maybe who are newer to that space, like give us the basics of what does it mean to be, you know, a cloud native pattern versus a, you know, a previous generation of application pattern.
Sure. So I think what's interesting to see, you know, these patterns from the design patterns work, for example, are still applicable, but a lot of things has obviously changed right in the past 25 years. The advent of public cloud and, you know, now we have potentially infinite compute available for us. Demands for kind of always on and no downtime are kind of standard. So it's this context which has changed. And what we've seen is that, you know, new patterns have need to be defined to solve the new challenges that we see in the new context. So while the old patterns are still relevant, we've had to define and identify new patterns to solve these new challenges. So if we think of, you know, cloud native patterns, which are probably known to most people, you look at things like containerized applications or automated infrastructure, continuous delivery. These are kind of the common high level patterns that we see in cloud native.
Yeah. And these are things I think sometimes are hard for people to originally kind of grasp because you say things like, well, you know, imagine that, you know, your compute can just go away at any point in time, or, you know, you really can't believe in reliability of storage. So you have to plan around this idea that things will just sort of go away. I think breaking people of those old habits of being like, you know, I have to plan for my database to be X number of nines, or, you know, this is the way that you do redundancy. It's, you know, N plus one. To me, that's always sort of the first step people have to get over is kind of going, okay, those concepts that you had kind of, you know, beaten into you for 20 years. Now, some of those things may not necessarily be real, but it doesn't mean that you can't build things that are going to be reliable and high performance and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. And it's this big shift, which is difficult to get used to. And that's where I think patterns can be useful is, you know, the idea is that explain a certain context in which they're relevant. And then here are the challenges which you may see. So, you know, context being, okay, we're running in public cloud and your applications are not just running on one physical machine anymore, but could be running on multiple and different physical data centers. So here are potential challenges which you might run into. So now here are some ways to try and solve those.
Okay. When you're talking to people, you're talking to clients or developers, like where do you start as you're talking about cloud native patterns? Do you talk about the applications? Do you talk about kind of the underlying technology? It could be, you know, the idea of public cloud zones and regions or containers or Kubernetes. Like where do you find is a good place to start? Does it really depend on kind of who the audience is as you're trying to explain these new pattern types?
So that's a good question. And I think that's a really important part of these kind of pattern-based approach in general is that the idea is you start with your own context. You know, I need to identify what is my use case? What are my specific challenges? What are my goal as a business? What are my constraints? And then from there, we can kind of start to build out, okay, here are some patterns which are relevant, right? This context matches yours. These are potential problems that you're already seeing or may see in the future, rather than just coming in and saying, okay, these are the best practices in cloud native, right? I mean, this it, this doesn't exist. It really depends on your own specific use case. And that's why we find it much easier to use this patterns approach, where you can just choose the ones which are relevant for your situation and then start building it from there.
Okay. Are there some sort of standard patterns, beginner patterns? If somebody said, like, you know, what are those patterns? Is this sort of, it's always talking about 12 factor, or is there, you know, sort of a name and a construct of these patterns that people should start being aware of?
Definitely a good question. I think the 12 factor reference is a good one, right? This is the kind of main idea and theme that we're trying to continue, where it's, we're not focused on specific technology. And this is something which you see a lot of in technology in general, and specifically in cloud native, is we think it's only about the technology. So, okay, I'm going to take my application, I'm going to split it up into microservices, I'm going to put them all in Docker containers, I'm going to run it on Kubernetes, and okay, now we're cloud native. But, you know, if you're not changing the ways that you're actually working, if you're not changing your organization, your culture, then you're not going to actually get any of the benefits from these new technologies. So I think this is one of the main messages that needs to come across when you're starting down this road, is that yes, there are all these great new technologies which can help you, but if you're just going to use them in the same way that you use the old ones, then you're not going to see the benefit. So it's adjusting both at the same time. So yes, maybe it's going to help me to bring in containerize my applications, bring in dynamic scheduling, but at the same time, I need to adjust the way that my teams are structured. You know, maybe I need to have these build run teams so that my application developers are also responsible for deploying and for then maintaining that application. So I think it's this balance which is really important for people to grasp at the beginning.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And again, it kind of comes back to this thing that we always talk about, like it's, you know, it is people, process, it's technology. You can't do one without the others. Do you find in talking to groups that, and this may be a question that, you know, doesn't necessarily have an answer, like, are there some like starting points that are easier to move them into these new patterns, or are there certain patterns that are more easier to adopt, right? Like, so if somebody says, like, you know, hey, we have a LAMP stack, or we have sort of your normal, you know, three-tier, you know, web middleware database stack, is it easier to move them to something, or is there, like, I'm trying to get around this idea of, like, if somebody is somewhere that's in a sort of known place that lots and lots of companies have, like, you know, is there a pattern that sort of fits for them typically moving forward, or, you know, is it really just dependent on, like, hey, this is what the business wants to do?
So good question. And I think it's a little bit of both. So again, one of the other benefits of patterns is, of course, that we're reusing the knowledge of others. So the patterns themselves emerge from people who have kind of gone down this path. You know, cloud native has been around now long enough that we can see what works and what doesn't work so well. So
right.
This is the idea of that, you know, I can identify my context. So I have a LAMP stack, you know, maybe things are more in what we call a monolith, and I'm seeing some of the challenges which identify with that. You know, I'm not being able to move fast enough to deliver features as quick as I want. So maybe splitting that into microservices is going to solve some of my challenges. So, you know, that's a kind of a high level cloud native pattern is to microservices. And from there, you can kind of go into the next step. So, okay, how do I go through this approach? So look at maybe a strangler pattern is a common approach to do this migration from monolith to microservices. Am I looking at, you know, running in the public cloud? Then again, we have new challenges which may arise in new contexts. And then what are the patterns there which are relevant for me? Does it make sense to containerize my applications? Is serverless a pattern which might be applicable for me? So again, it's finding these patterns which are relevant for you.
Yeah. And if you go down that path, so let's say somebody like you start working with somebody, you get to a point where you say, like, hey, maybe containers make sense, right? That's a part of a pattern that makes sense to you. Do you then sort of build backwards for them and go, okay, you know, this is how containers are different for, you know, packaging your application or immutability of your application, but this is how it's now going to apply to, The way your team collaborates, right? So this will impact, you know, your CI and CD pipelines, or this will impact how your security team works. Do you sort of start from one point and then work backwards so you can hit on both the technology changes and the kind of the culture organizational changes? Is that a good way to sort of think about things?
Yeah, definitely. So it's definitely the connection between them which makes it interesting. So that's when we talk about a pattern language, it's how they relate to each other which makes it more powerful to use. So in the example of, I want to containerize my applications. Okay. So, you know, what does that relate to? Well, you know, then I'm probably going to need some kind of dynamic scheduling to, you know, solve how I'm going to run all of these containers on different machines. And there are some added security concerns which come up with when we have containers. So then we have, you know, maybe we're going to do things about, having immutable images, having read-only file systems, these kind of things. So it definitely, they kind of, network out from one pattern to another. And then you, from there, you can kind of build out your strategy of how you want to do this approach.
Okay. You just mentioned a term, you said pattern language. What does that mean? Is that sort of the broader framework around one of these patterns, or is that a specific type of thing, you know, concept that you use?
So pattern language it's essentially, you know, a collection of patterns and how they relate to each other. So in that book in architecture, I initially mentioned the idea is that it has a list of patterns, but they're not necessarily independent. And that having this pattern language gives you a common language to speak from, so that when we all say, you know, continuous integration, we understand what that means, and we understand how that relates to things like microservices, things like containers. We remove a little bit the ambiguity when we have this common language that we can all speak of.
Yeah, I find that's really interesting. We do this weird thing, in sort of the cloud native world, in that a lot of the language that we use, if you took it just on face value, or you put it in the context of, you know, kind of the world you grew up in, some of it just seems really weird. So for example, we talk about, people talk about immutability all the time, and you're like, I don't even know what immutability means. Or they say things like blameless postmortems, and you're like, no, you know, every group I've ever worked in, if there's, you know, something blew up, there was always blame to have. And I think there is as much an education on the technology side, you know, it's containers or Kubernetes or AWS or whatever, as like, why do we use those terms? Why do we use those concepts that sound almost like backwards from what we've always sort of grown up around with, you know, either how your organization worked or technology? Like, do you find sometimes that you have to spend a lot of time just explaining those concepts to people as much as you do the languages and the technology stuff?
Yeah, definitely. So again, I think this is the biggest challenge which organizations have is understanding that it's about the changing your culture as well. And, now that we have these new technologies in place, we need to change, how our teams are structured. We need to adjust our security rules, right? We can't just have this same system where we file a ticket somewhere to open a hole in a firewall. We need to be able to move fast and change a little bit of everything. And again, this idea of ambiguous or not well-defined terms is a problem, right? So we're sitting in a meeting and discussing about an architecture. We're using the same words, but we have a different understanding of what they mean. So again, if we have this reference that we can go back to of this list of patterns, which has a clear definition, then at least we understand we're talking about the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, no, it makes total sense. Have you found, one of the things that people, are starting to understand, with new cloud native applications is, it's not just a sort of one-time event to deploy something. We're trying to get into this model of deploy, sort of monitor what's going on, collect information, create some feedback loops, more rapid deployments. Do you find that in this world where we're deploying more frequently, we're collecting more information, that certain patterns are easier to maintain than others, or some are harder to maintain? Like, is that part of the framework that you talk about around patterns, not just, how to get started, but what the longer term life cycle looks like?
So that's a good question. And I would think I'm not sure I quite yet have the data on this in terms of, how they kind of hold up over time. But I think what's interesting is that, and especially when you talk about, you know, deploying more frequently and making changes kind of constantly, this is the world that we're moving towards, right? Where it's we want to build a system that is able to change easily and change often. So, you know, it's not like this is another, you know, every 5 years we do a migration from this technology stack to that technology stack, and cloud native is just the next one. The idea is that we want to build our systems for change from the beginning now, so that it's, you know, trivial to make changes later on. And we have this idea of evolutionary or constant architecture so that we can continually make changes. And the idea is that when you have this built in, it's, you know, maintenance should become easier, just as we can, you know, deliver features in our services quicker. We can similarly make changes as needed to our architecture on a similar kind of cadence. But of course, this is getting used to this as well, of that it's okay to make changes kind of on the fly as we get more data coming in.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I don't mean to sort of keep asking these questions that are like, you know, do you know exactly how this works? And you're like, oh, no, we're still evolving some things, some things work for certain people and other people. I think that's the point of this whole thing, is that, you know, we are now working in a different type of world in which, you know, change happens more frequently. We don't want to treat change as being this terrible thing. We treat it as it's just part of the system, and the fact that you can now collect information about it, you can analyze it in more real time, if you will, and then you can adjust to it. You know, that's sort of the new world we live in. And, you know, trying to help explain to people like that, the way that you're going to think about it, the patterns that happen with that, I think is really important. And but you know, as we're talking about it, is sometimes kind of hard to nail down. There's not an exactness to it, and I think that's one of the biggest differences that people are kind of getting used to, is maybe they were used to more precision, or the belief there was more kind of like exactness of the system, and now it's, you know, you're going to get 70 or 80% of it right, and then you're going to modify it and maybe get 81% right and 82%, and you're kind of constantly having to live in this evolving world. But that's sort of the world we live in now.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point, right? This, we always have a little bit of uncertainty going on. And it's, you know, we don't have this clear cut, here's the way that, you know, you should build a cloud native system and all of the systems should look alike. So implement this and you will have success. But it's, that's why we're, you know, shifting towards patterns rather than just best practices. So here are, you know, collections of designs which are useful in these contexts. You know, you can recognize your context, and I'm going to choose this pattern to implement. But then even on the implementation stage, there's room for, you know, your own, building your own bespoke solution. So you can still add in what's relevant to you, which again, leaves us with this little bit of uncertainty.
Yeah.
That you're mentioning.
Well, and I think that's important, because when this stuff first started getting, yeah, you know, kind of visible and you know, into the broader conscious, it was always couched in the idea of like, well, this is what Netflix does, or this is what Google does. And, you know, and for lots and lots of companies, and, you know, you've got background having worked with different companies, like it's sometimes very easy for a company to go, well, we're not Google. We're not, you know, we're not Netflix. We don't serve video. We do whatever else we do. We do retail, we do manufacturing, we do, you know, we're government, whatever. And I think it's really important now that these things are getting, you know, into frameworks that you can look at, you can sort of see them. You don't have to feel like, oh, okay, well, if I'm not Netflix, this doesn't apply to me. And I think that's been one of the biggest evolutions we've seen over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, is people starting to grasp this idea that, you know, these patterns may have started somewhere, or you may have heard about them in some context, but they can be very applicable to, you know, lots of problems that you have in your business. If your business is delivering software, there's some change in the environment, and your goal is to be more proactive in that framework.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, it's very correct to say that, you know, I'm not Netflix and I'm not Google. So yes, you don't want to implement entirely what they did, but there are pieces there which are going to be very relevant for you, and you're going to have similar challenges.
Right. Well, I, you know, I'll sort of ask one last question just to wrap this up a little bit. And I appreciate the guidance. And for folks kind of listening to this going like, man, I want to learn more about the patterns. We put a bunch of stuff in the show notes. Ian's talked about this a lot of good presentation topics and information that you can dig into. So you can go back to that when we finish up. Let me ask you one last question. What are some of the, you know, sort of common tips, things that you run into all the time that people can expect both in terms of, you know, maybe a success or two once you do these well, or maybe a, you know, a failure, a thing to avoid? What are some of the, you know, common things that you you run into with you know, with clients as you're going through this journey, maybe that they could expect to you know, along the way?
Sure. So there's, I think of a couple of things which are kind of common challenges that people run into at the beginning. One which I alluded to a little bit before is this notion that, you know, thinking cloud native is just about technology. And if I, you know, put everything in Docker containers and run on Kubernetes, then the problem is solved. So definitely having that initial understanding that you need to adjust your processes. We need to, you know, adjust our team structures and our organization, or else we're not going to see the benefits. That's a really big first step if you can kind of get an organizational alignment around that. Another kind of similar related challenge is, you know, we have this thing in technology where there's, you know, a new product or a new tool that comes out and, you know, we get really excited about it. And, hey, I just saw this cool presentation on Istio at this conference and I'm going to come back and, you know, put this into my architecture and it'll solve some problems somewhere. And it's, you know, we kind of have this pro innovation bias that comes to this new technology and this must go everywhere. So we want to try and work backwards and, again, start from your own context, define what challenges you currently have, then identify, okay, here are some patterns which recognize that context and can implement, and only then start to looking at the specific tool that's needed. So once you, this is like the third step down the road, is I can say, okay, does Kubernetes solve this for me? Does Istio Service Mesh solve this for me? So again, starting from your context and your problems is a good way to begin. There's also, so on the website, which is linked in the notes, there's a collection of all of these patterns. There's an entire section on kind of strategy and risk reduction. So, you know, how to get started early. So we talk about things like what's called a no regret move, right? So quick actions which don't require a lot of time or money, but immediately give you knowledge and give you some benefits. So, you know, running small experiments to, you know, get familiar with the technology to understand if implementing this is actually going to solve your problem or not, rather than, you know, building out this 3-year strategy plan to and then going to implement. But we need to move towards quicker early iteration. And then, you know, if you find that, hey, this actually doesn't solve my problem, then that's fine and move on to the next thing. But you'll see these kind of quick wins and the quick progress, which tends to get more buy-in from the wider team and wider organization and grows momentum.
Yeah, no, I think those are great guidances, especially the last one. That's one that I see a lot in talking to different companies is, you know, what'll happen is their central IT team will get involved or their architecture team gets involved. And they, you know, they've got a part of the business that's saying, hey, you know, if we do this thing, we can go solve a business problem. We can go, you know, have a win, have some tangibility to something. And they go, but yeah, but that varies, you know, the architecture we're used to, or, you know, what happens when that scales or whatever. And sometimes, you know, what I find is like the successful companies tend to go, we're going to go do this, right? It could be an experiment or it could be just they need a win, right? They're going to go solve a business problem. And then the companies that struggle or get bogged down go, well, we need to analyze this in the broader context of the architecture and blah, 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 blah. And sometimes you have to tell them like, look, you know, this is a new way of doing it. It might change your current architecture. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And maybe the way to think about it is exactly like you said, you know, don't wait 3 years for this thing. Like, you can do something now, even if it's bespoke now, but you may see business value. And I think that's maybe one of the biggest lessons I've learned is the more people try and turn this into a 3 and 5 year architecture and solve all the problems of the company, the more they get sort of, you know, analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis, in there. So that's really, really good advice there. Any last thoughts or things, you know, if people want to dig into this more with you, you know, what are some good ways to either, you know, reach out to you, you know, engage with the stuff that you do around container solutions, or just, you know, kind of, you know, pick your brain about patterns and how to be successful with them?
Yeah, sure. So, you'll find some links in the show notes. There's an O'Reilly book, which, a couple of my colleagues put out recently, called Cloud Native Transformation, which details a lot of these patterns I've been talking about. And they're also on a website, cnpatterns.org. And what we're currently working on doing is, so these are more high-level patterns, and we're currently kind of diving into more details and building in more low-level technical patterns. And the idea is that we'll have kind of an open-source repository there where, you know, anybody can come in and make suggestions and improvements and make this more of a community run thing than just something that we've built internally. So for now, it's kind of based on our experience and working with all our clients, but, you know, we want to bring in more and more input from the community.
Yeah, no. And the CN pattern site is great. I mean, it's, like you said, it's not just technology, but it's, you know, it's risk and strategy, it's organization and culture. That's a fantastic resource for people. So, well, listen, Ian, thank you so much for the time this morning. You know, this is a huge topic in terms of, you know, just the breadth that can get into. It can be technology, it can be culture, it can be, you know, how it impacts the business. But thank you so much for the time this morning. Folks, with that, we're going to wrap it up. You know, hope everybody is staying safe out there. You know, follow good practices, stay away from each other, wash your hands. But thank you as always for listening. We appreciate everyone giving us some time, everyone telling their friends about the show or giving us a rating on iTunes and other places. And with that, we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.